Good evening. Tonight is our lunar observance night here at Abaiaguri, and the community has been practicing together now for the past few months in observance of our annual winter retreat. So we've had a few months so far to really devote ourselves to cultivating more of the formal practice, and we've had a lot of time for withdrawing from the world and worldly activities to be able to focus a lot more on our minds. And, you know, for all of us coming into this this retreat period and also the just the practice in general, we all come with expectations, and we all come because we're looking for something. And even, you know, coming to a retreat, we're looking for peace and happiness. Maybe in a particular retreat, we're hoping to have special meditative experiences. Maybe we're even hoping to realize enlightenment. And you know, over the past few months of practicing together now, then, you know, we've probably experienced many, many different things, you know, positive and negative experiences. And, you know, maybe some of the things that we were hoping for, maybe we have experienced those to some degree, and maybe we haven't at all. But I think for everyone, you know, probably just about everyone here, you know, the reality is that whatever we've experienced in this particular retreat, there's probably still more that we desire in the practice. You know, there's still more to do, and there might still be a lot more to do. So we're all, you know, we all find ourselves in this kind of situation in the practice where we have, you know, many goals and things that we desire in the practice. We desire, you know, quite inspiring and lofty things, deep states of concentration and to develop deep states of insight. But, you know, for many of us, for most of us, we tend to find that there's quite a large gap between where we'd like to be in the practice and where we actually are. And I think that this is very common experience in retreats, that we, you know, in the beginning of the retreat, we're very inspired and really fired up, and we, you know, we want to attain different things and we really jump in. But, you know, for most of us, the practice is something that really takes a long time, and for most of us, it's something that takes a lot longer than we've expected. So this is, I think it's good, you know, to point this out, because for most of us, you know, when we do have these kind of expectations or desires in practice that we don't quite meet up to, you know, it's very easy to feel very frustrated in the practice. And I think that that's really, yeah, very common for people to, yeah, you know, get very frustrated. You might spend a few months trying to experience a lot of peace, and maybe you don't experience any, or maybe you only experience a very small amount. So it's very easy to feel frustrated and, you know, just give up the practice altogether, or maybe just really step back and not really put much effort in anymore. So I think that that's very common in the practice. And but for myself, I there's different similes that I like to contemplate in terms of the practice, because I've found for myself, and I think probably just about everyone who's practiced, that you know, the way that we would like our practice to go and the way that we expect our practice to go is usually not really the way that it goes. And a lot of times when I walk through the forest, I like to look at the different trees and sometimes just imagine, you know, what did they look like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And, you know, all of the trees in the forest, even the biggest trees, you know, huge redwood trees that are incredibly impressive. You know, all of them without exception, at one point they were just a tiny little shrub growing out of the ground. And, you know, I like to contemplate that this is, you know, this is very much like our practice, and is very much like our spiritual practice. We desire, you know, very lofty things, but all of us have to start in kind of the opposite place, you know, a place that's not very lofty, you know, kind of the opposite extreme. You know, we can look at a redwood tree and, you know, it's incredibly inspiring. But, you know, if we looked back many tens or even hundreds of years ago, you know, we probably wouldn't really be inspired by the little shrub growing out of the ground. You know, wouldn't really give it a second thought. But the things in the world that are impressive and very large, they take a lot of time to develop into that. And it's just like, you know, everyone in the world who accomplishes great things, like, you know, Olympic athletes or people who rise to the top of their field, and kind of world leaders and people like this, you know, everybody without exception, at one point, you know, they couldn't even walk, or they couldn't even talk. You know, they had to learn all of those very, very basic things before they could go on to become something incredibly impressive. So that's very much like our practice is, you know, we have to start with the basics. Like, that's the theme of our retreat this year, is back to the basics. And a lot of times we don't really want to be working with the basics, maybe, you know, we want to be experiencing really profound states of mind. But like all of the things in the world, you know, the trees, the people, there's a process of development that has to take place from the most simple, maybe kind of uninspiring object. And, you know, a process that takes usually many years. You know, trees or people, they take many years to learn how to develop and grow into something which is incredibly impressive. And our spiritual practice is exactly like that. And yeah, I think, you know, so often when we first come to the monastery, you know, we're very inspired by meditation masters and, you know, very inspiring senior monks that we live with, and we read the stories of the great meditation masters, you know, incredibly, incredibly inspiring stories. And so often we compare ourselves to those stories that we read. And sometimes it can be kind of depressing. You know, so many of the Thai meditation masters, if you read their biographies, you know, it's not always the case, but a lot of them, maybe even most of them, you know, even from the time they were children, you know, maybe they had really incredible experiences. And, you know, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them maybe didn't really have that much difficulty in the practice. You know, maybe in the first year or something, they were already, you know, experiencing really profound fruits of the practice. And, you know, although that's incredibly inspiring, I think that that's not really most of our experience. And comparing ourselves to these great masters, you know, that can lead to, it can lead to frustration as well, and giving up the practice. And I was recently rereading this one particular biography of Lumpa Tun, who was a really incredible meditation master from Thailand, and his biography is really incredible. You know, one of the most incredible I think I've ever read, and it's you know, on one hand, it's very much like what I was mentioning. You know, if you read about his, even when he was a child, I think he talks about having really, you know, incredible samadhi experiences. And but what I found really fascinating and inspiring was he, you know, he was able to recollect many of his past lives, and he tells, you know, the reader about what many of those lives were. And it's very, you know, inspiring and fascinating to see that, you know, and although in this life he seems to have been almost born enlightened and from the beginning, you know, it definitely wasn't always the case. And in so many of his past lives, you know, he cycled from very low states of existence to higher states. But even, you know, the times that he recollects as a monk, you know, he still was not perfect. And there's this kind of story episode in his biography where he's paying respects to Lumpu Khao, and who is also, you know, an incredible meditation master, and who can also remember his many of his past lives. And the two of them are kind of discussing, you know, their past existences and asking each other questions. And, you know, both of them, you know, although in this life they were, you know, incredible in their meditation and, you know, were able to do incredible things. You know, both of them had been to hell before for various misdeeds. You know, both of them had been animals. They both recollected actually their more recent lifetimes when they were monks, and they both actually said that they were monks in the time of the Buddha. And it's really fascinating stories, though, because Lumpa Tun, you know, said he was actually living with Ajahn Mun, who was a leader of a community at that time. But, you know, Ajahn Mun, who in this lifetime is, you know, incredibly impressive as well, you know, he had a kind of some wrong views or something, and he almost ended up disrobing. He, this kind of very fascinating story where he, Ajahn Mun, you know, in the time of the Buddha, just decided to leave and put on lay clothes and left the monastery. But they all felt that it wasn't a valid disrobal, so he actually came back and kind of continued on as a monk. But, you know, reading something like that, you know, you read this in the story of Ajahn Mun in his last life, and he's, you know, just seems perfect. And, you know, Lumpa Khao as well, he was relating how in his, one of his, you know, his past life, living in the time of the Buddha, he says that he was actually one of the monks who followed Devadatta as a newly ordained monk. And, you know, he said even though he was very diligent and, you know, interested in practice, you know, in that lifetime he didn't really experience, you know, the real fruits of the practice. So I really found these stories to be quite fascinating and inspiring, because, you know, so often we just focus on the last lifetime of these great meditators, and when we compare ourselves to them, it's just something that we can never match up to. And a lot of times we can just feel like, you know, maybe meditation is not really for us. You know, we can't do these kinds of things. So, but reading these stories, you know, we realize that, you know, all of these great masters, they were basically just like us, you know, for many lifetimes. You know, no matter where we are in the practice, we can say that, you know, all of these great masters at some point over the past many lifetimes, you know, they were just like us as well. So I think that that's, you know, can be really inspiring to recollect that. And yeah, in terms of, you know, kind of measuring ourselves and frustration and practice, I've thought that it's very interesting how in the world, you know, people really love, like, the, you know, the underdog story, you know, in any kind of different areas of life, like sports and, you know, business and different areas. You know, we always really like and are really inspired by, you know, the underdog, the person who no one really expects to be able to succeed, you know, the sports team that nobody thinks could possibly win, or the person who no one thinks they'll be able to succeed. And, you know, the stories of when those people are able to overcome the odds and rise above their limitations, you know, there's something within us that is incredibly inspired by that. You know, even the American dream, you know, is kind of starting from nothing, you know, starting from a place of poverty and through hard work, working one's way up to the top and to attain success in that way. So it's something that's, you know, deep in our minds, this love and feeling inspiration for the underdog story. And in thinking about why that is, I feel like it's, you know, it's because we're incredibly inspired by somebody who's able to overcome their weaknesses. You know, all of the people who, you know, have particular weaknesses, and you feel like they won't be able to win, they won't be able to succeed. And when they are able to overcome their weaknesses and rise above those limitations, it's, you know, we find it incredibly inspiring. And I think the reason is because that's, you know, that's basically what all of us are. I think we're all, you know, we're all the underdog. And, you know, really everyone in the world, you know, even worldly people, they all have weaknesses. And, you know, worldly people try to deal with their weaknesses and their defilements in different ways than we do, and, you know, mostly unskillful ways. But, you know, we all have some kind of weakness, and we, you know, there's just something inside us that wants to be able to overcome that and to not be held down by it anymore. And, you know, seeing the underdogs in the world, it's incredibly inspiring that they're able to overcome their weaknesses and their limitations. And I feel like this, you know, spiritual practice is like the, you know, it's like the ultimate underdog story, because, you know, all of us, you know, in our battle against our defilements and in our battle against our weaknesses, you know, we could say that we're all incredible underdogs. And I've thought that, you know, if you just select a newborn baby at random, completely at random in the world, and you were to ask, you know, what is the probability that that baby will grow up to become someone who overcomes their defilements, you know, the probability is almost zero. So in that, this practice of trying to overcome our defilements, you know, it's like the steepest odds. And yet there are people in the world who do overcome their defilements, You know, there are people who actually do it. If we could have seen them when they were a baby, and we asked what is the chance that they'll overcome their weaknesses and their defilements, if we didn't really know anything about their background, you know, we would say it's almost zero. But there are people who are able to do it, and that's, you know, I feel like this spiritual life is like the ultimate underdog story. And, you know, reading these stories of the great masters, you know, particularly if we focus on the fact that they have spent many lifetimes developing this practice, and, you know, in many lifetimes when they did have very large weaknesses and they weren't always successful, they're proof, you know, they're the example that it can be done, and they're the sports team that is able to defeat somebody who no one thought that they could. You know, these great masters, you know, they have done something which people would think is impossible. And I find, yeah, just recollecting that, I find is incredibly inspiring, and it's something that we can bring back into our own practice, you know, no matter where we are, even if we spend several months in a retreat and we don't have any success and we have only suffering, you know, instead of allowing that to really cause us frustration and depression, you know, I think it's very useful, very inspiring to recollect that, you know, even the great masters were like us as well. So a lot of times when we first come to the monastery, then we see, you know, you see the very inspiring examples of practitioners, and we read these stories, and, you know, we consider somebody like Lumpur Cha, the great meditation masters, you know, we kind of consider them to be perfect and like, you know, a 100%, like A+, in the spiritual life. And maybe for us, when we look at ourselves, you know, maybe we feel like we're a zero or something, you know, like a 0%. And, you know, over time, we practice and put forth this effort in following these teachings, they're able to develop ourselves, you know, very gradually, like the trees, you know, able to develop gradually. But a lot of times, you know, we might spend years, you know, battling our weaknesses, and sometimes, you know, for a lot of us, we might not feel like we've really progressed much, or maybe only a very small amount. So it's kind of like, over time, you know, if we practice skillfully, then we will see changes within ourselves. You know, we will see the mind moving in a positive direction, and our negative emotions starting to decrease. But a lot of times we have the experience of, you know, maybe after many years, we would consider ourselves maybe like a 10%, a 20%. And maybe after many years, we get to a point where we kind of feel like we've gained some kind of ground against a lot of our problems, and we've had some kind of little successes, but maybe we still consider ourselves to be like a 50% when we compare ourselves with the great masters who we aspire to be. And, you know, just like in school, like a 50% is like an F. So we might sometimes still have this experience of like we've practiced for many years, but when we compare ourselves to the ideal and compare ourselves to the meditation masters, we might still feel like a failure. But I think it's also very important to to reflect on where we've come from and reflect on, you know, what things used to be like for us before we started practicing or in the early stages of practice. And you can find, you know, I find quite a helpful reflection, you know, if we consider ourselves, you know, to kind of be a failure in meditation. Most likely, you know, if we've been practicing for a considerable amount of time, if we look back, you know, we will be able to see improvements, you know, even if they're only small improvements. And if we consider ourselves to be a 50%, still a failure, but that's actually a very large amount of progress, you know, from 0 to 50, and it's actually halfway to 100%. And also, you know, like in school, the 50% and the 0% are both considered like a failing grade, but they're not worth the same. You know, the 50% is actually worth more. You know, if the class is graded on points, so even though you kind of look at them and you say, oh, they're both failures, but one is actually a lot better than the other. And I find that this is a really good reflection that we can have, you know, when we judge our own progress in the practice. You know, for most of us, I think we're probably, you know, not exactly where we would like to be. And for a lot of us, it's probably really far away from where we'd like to be. But, you know, when we look at the past and we consider, you know, what we used to be like and the problems that we used to have, you know, we can see that there has been progress, and we can use this reflection that, you know, even if we feel like, you know, in the broad scope of things, we're really not that much of a success at meditation, or we're not really, you know, that amazing. You know, if we have progressed, and, you know, maybe we've progressed quite a lot, that can be, you know, very inspiring to bring that up in the mind. You know, we might not be where we want to be. It might not be a really big success in our meditation, but we are getting there, you know, slowly. We're slowly working our way there. And this is, you know, I find is a really helpful reflection for continuing to motivate ourselves when we run into difficulties and challenges in the practice, and you know, practice doesn't really go exactly how we think it should, or progress as fast or as smoothly as we think it should. And I was thinking, this theme of, you know, the underdog story and working with our limitations. There's many stories that I can remember. I was thinking, you know, a few stories that I can remember from childhood that are really, yeah, beautiful stories that demonstrate this theme as well. I really like to bring these to mind as well in those situations where we don't really feel like we're measuring up to our expectations. And yeah, both of these stories, probably everyone has heard these, maybe when they were children, but these kind of classic stories that we teach to children. The, you know, the story of the tortoise and the hare, you know, which, as people know, is the race between the fast rabbit and the very slow turtle. And, you know, no one would think that a turtle would ever be able to beat a rabbit in a race. And, you know, as the story goes, the rabbit runs out to a very quick lead, but then kind of becomes overconfident and decides to take a bit of a rest. And as he's sleeping, then the turtle is able to slowly push by him and win the race. And this is a great story, you know, that, you know, teaches children in a very, very simple way that, you know, through effort we can overcome our limitations. You know, through steady effort we can defy the odds and do what no one ever thought that we could do. And also one of my other favorite stories from childhood is the story probably everyone knows about the group of ducks living together, and you know one of the ducks is not like the other ducks, and the duckling that doesn't look like all of the other ones, and it's very ugly, and the other ducklings kind of look down on that duckling and consider it to be kind of the lowest and the most ugly duckling. Something very strange about it. It doesn't really fit in with the other ducks. But as people know, as the story progresses and the ugly duckling develops and grows and matures, eventually it starts to become apparent that the ugly duckling is not actually a duck at all. And eventually, you know, it becomes apparent that this strange bird is actually like a beautiful swan. And eventually it leaves and it soars away where the ducks can't go. And yeah, I find this incredibly beautiful, inspiring story, because, you know, it's proof that even those who, you know, are considered maybe the lowest in society and those who have the most problems, you know, we never really know what our potential is. You know, we never really know, you know, what kind of potential we have. And if we, you know, if we develop ourselves, you know, even a situation where we feel like we're lower than everyone else, you know, whether in the monastery or in the world, you know, it is possible to go beyond our limitations. It's possible to perhaps become something which is even more inspiring than the others. And, you know, the mind which has defilements is, you know, even the Buddha said is kind of ugly, you know, it's impure, ugly. You know, the mind with defilements is like the ugly duckling. You know, it doesn't feel at ease in the world. You know, wherever it goes, it doesn't really, it's not able to completely fit in. You know, it's not able to be really at ease. But, you know, just like the ugly duckling, you know, all of these defilements, you know, they can be worked with, they can be overcome. You know, we can purify our minds, and, you know, learning how to overcome the ugly qualities of the mind, we may be able to experience something within ourselves that is infinitely more beautiful and profound than anything else in the world. So these are just a few reflections for this evening, and I'll offer that for us.